On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm so grateful you're joining us here today. Whether you're listening live on KKNW AM 1150 in the Seattle area, WBLQ AM 1230 radio in Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New York, or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio, or after the fact on ChristineUpchurch.com in the radio show archives. But I tell you, wherever and whenever you're listening from today, you're going to be grateful you joined us. We're going to be heading into a subject and into a realm that we have never talked about, at least not for an entire show. But before I tell you about that, I want to say hello to my better half here in the studio who allows you to hear all these wonderful conversations. Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
Good morning, good day, good evening, depending on where you're listening to this show. And it's a pleasure to have you back on the air with us, Christine.
Oh, and it's so great to be here with you, Benny. And I tell you that for years now, literally, I've been wanting to find the right guest to talk about something that, you know, a lot of people are curious about. Some people have a sense about maybe in their own lives. And that is alien encounters.
Oh. Don't we all have? Don't we all hear that, see it, feel it, and we have our own little visions around it?
Yeah, and I think that in our culture today, Benny, that people are trying to sort of grasp this concept, first of all, that there can be physical experiences and experiences of other types, sort of, you know, connecting in this with these other dimensions, perhaps, but also trying to figure out how this fits into our overall puzzle of our evolution on this planet. Now, the person I'm talking about today, I'm so grateful to have here. She is Sherry Wilde. She's just like every woman, she's like every one of us, you know, sort of living our lives, but she's had some extraordinary things happen. She was born and raised in southwestern Wisconsin, and she continues to call Wisconsin her home. She operated a successful real estate business for many years that included sales, land development, and commercial renovations. And she's sort of had this lifelong experience interacting, and we'll get into that in detail. But, you know, the memories were repressed for a very long time until 1987, when her community started experiencing a UFO flap that was, like, considered to be one of the most active ones in the world. And so she has spent a lifetime sort of suppressing and then processing and remembering. And now she's written a book called The Forgotten Promise, Rejoining Our Cosmic Family, sort of putting it all into perspective, not only about her own life, but what this means for us, each and every one of us and our planet. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Sherry Wilde. Welcome, Sherry.
Hey, Christine. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you being here. And, you know, I've been fascinated with the subject for a very long time. And, you know, there are a lot of anecdotal kinds of experiences that people share. It's rare to find somebody with a story of like, the lifelong journey interacting with aliens or what we think are aliens and then being able to, like, remember it and put it into perspective. So tell me, at what stage of the game did you start to recognize that something had been going on in your life?
It was in 1987, 88, right in through there, when we did have the UFO flap in this community. It covered an area, three communities fairly close by, 7-8 miles apart, and it was like a triangular shape, I guess, where all the sightings was being reported. And I, at the time, was 37, 38 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I was very busy. As you say, I had my career, my business, my real estate business that I was working. And I had two children who were, one was almost a teenager, I think, at that time. She would have been preteen or very close to it. So I was busy with them, and my husband had his own company that he was running, so we had busy lives. And I was, as a matter of fact, I just yesterday when I was cleaning out some stuff here in my bedroom, I came across an old diary. And it covers the span of the years from the time I was about 23 years old and pregnant with my second child up until this happened. And it covers the struggle we went through with getting my husband through school. And so we just lived this normal life, you know, trying to get our life going and trying to get ahead. And we finally had gotten to that place in 1987, 88. The last entry before the final one, where I said, what's happening? My life has gone into, you know, has just fallen apart. Mm-hmm. The little entry into the diary before that was in November of 1987, and I wrote in there how happy I was and how life was perfect, and I couldn't ask for anything more. And finally, we had made it. Finally, we made it. You know? And you know, and I'm reading that, and I'm going, oh, no. Oh, Doc, run for cover, Sherry. You know, you just want to go back there and say, you know, oh, because it's all about the change. And sure enough, there was a little couple sentences, and I wrote, it was at the end of the diary. I'd run out of pages anyway, and I just wrote at the bottom of it that my life was over, that this whole UFO thing had started, my marriage had come undone. Everything was changed. So that's when it happened, was in 1987, late 87, early, probably summer of 88, actually, is when it really happened. Uh-huh. It was devastating, absolutely devastating.
So it somehow got triggered, and what unfolded then?
Well, the way that it happened is I had, I'm going to take it back to 1968, I guess it would have been, seven, 20 years previous to that, I had been going to my girlfriend's house and driving through the Wisconsin countryside in the spring, and we had made arrangements that I get to her house by 10 o'clock that morning. And if I was there by 10 o'clock, I would go shopping with her and her sister. And that was the plan that we had. If I wasn't there by 10, they were supposed to go without me because it meant I wasn't able to get off work. My parents owned a motel.
So you were a teenager then, right?
I was a teenager, yeah. I was 17.
So a teenage girl wanting to go shopping with other teenage girls. I mean, that's yep. high priority.
Yes, that was a very high priority. And I was so excited because my mother let me off work. They owned a motel, and I cleaned rooms. And it was a Sunday morning, and I asked if, and so the motel had been full the night before, but I asked if I could get off. I did as many of my rooms as I could, and I was surprised that she said, yeah, you can go. Because that's why I made the plan with my friend Vicky that way, because I wasn't sure. I wasn't completely positive I'd be able to get free. So I got free, and I got in my little blue VW Bug, and I drove over to my girlfriend's house. She lives about 15 minutes away. Through the countryside I had to drive, and as I'm driving along, my car stalls and it just stops running, and I remember it as clear as could be, and as the car is rolling to a stop and I'm trying frantically to get it to start again, I notice these men standing in the road, and one of them steps out into my lane of traffic, and I can see him through the windshield as my car rolls to a stop right at his feet. And the next thing I know, I'm walking into my girlfriend's house, and I'm standing in her kitchen looking up at the clock, and it's saying straight up 12 noon, 2 hours late.
Wow.
And I can't figure out how did that happen. And Vicky, my friend, she comes running down the stairs, and she's tearing the curlers out of her hair. She's coming down, and she's saying, where were you? You're 2 hours late, and you're just lucky the cows got out, or we were left without you. And I said, it's not noon. Is it noon? And she said, yes, it's noon. And I went running around to the other rooms looking at the clocks, and they all said noon, and I never could figure it out. Well, I didn't think about it again. We went off shopping that day, and I didn't think about it until 20 years later. Now I'm 37 years old, and all of a sudden, I'm thinking about that day, and I'm going, what in the world happened that day, and why did I never want to know what happened? Why did I just go on with my life? And I'm missing 2 hours of my time, and there were four men standing out there, one of them standing in front of my car with his hand up. I mean, what in the world? And I was disturbed by it. I was disturbed more by the fact that I didn't seem to care what had happened than I was disturbed by the fact that I had actually lost 2 hours of time. But both of those things were weighing on me. And so I was, every night before I would fall asleep, I was reliving the events, and I remembered it very clearly. I remembered the Beach Boys song on the radio, everything happening. But when my car came to a stop, I tried looking out the windshield at the man's face because I knew instinctively if I could see his face, that would give me the answer to what had happened to me. There's, somehow I knew that. But my heart would start to pound, and I couldn't get there. So I had decided I was going to look for a hypnotist. Back in 1987, no computers,
Google it.
So I was looking in the Yellow Pages and looking around. So my girlfriend calls me, the same girlfriend, Vicky. We're still best friends, even now. And so the same person who was involved back then, she calls me and she says, "Gary, let's go to the auditorium at the high school tonight or tomorrow night, whenever it was." And she said, "Because the researchers who are up here investigating the UFO flap are going to tell us what they think is happening and what's going on."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I'm not interested." And she said, "Oh, come on, you must be interested. You of all people would be interested." And I said, "I'm not interested, Vicky. I don't want to do that." And she said, "Yeah, but," she said, "you always talked about UFOs." And I said, "I never talked about UFOs." And she said, "Yes, you did. Don't you remember that, for instance, that day when you were 2 hours late getting to my house?" And I said, "Oh, then I sat up and I said, "Yeah, I remember that day. But I've been thinking about it a lot." And she said, "Well, remember you had 2 hours of missing time?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, in the paper it said, the investigator said that if you've seen a UFO and then you're missing time, they want to talk to you because they probably would be interested in hypnotizing you and retrieving those memories because they think the aliens probably kidnapped you and took you aboard the spaceship." And I just laughed. I laughed so hard and I got tears in my eyes. And I said, "Vicky," I said, "did you just hear what you said?" I said, "That's the craziest thing I ever heard." I said, "That doesn't happen." And she said, "Well, it was in the paper." And I said, "I don't care." I said, "That doesn't happen." I said, "That doesn't happen. That's ridiculous. I've never heard of anything so bizarre." And she said, "Well, that's what they said." And I said, "Well, you know what? I'll go with you." Because I decided if they hypnotize people, they must use a really good hypnotist. And I want to get the name of the hypnotist. I'll go with you.
So before you finish that story, we're going to go to a quick break. But when we return, Sherry, I'm going to be curious about who you connected with and what you found out about those 2 hours of missing time. More with Sherry Wild here in just a few moments.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
The goal for the Art of Powerful Living Radio is to inspire every human to live lives that are rich, fulfilling, on purpose, and fun. This hit show with Robert Schoenfeld is a fresh approach to boldly living our lives with creativity, courage, patience, wisdom, love, and power. Join Robert every month with Dr. Pat Baselli for the Art of Powerful Living Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, Genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience, where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. So, Sherry, we have to continue this story. You know, here you are, you know, 17, you've lost a couple of hours of time. You arrive at your friend's house, and apparently you're talking about UFOs. And you've gotten to this place where you're going to get connected with somebody who can help hypnotize you so that you can remember, bring forth this repressed memory. Okay, so you go to this presentation. What happens next?
Well, that was interesting. At the presentation, it was the Center for UFO Studies out of Chicago. And so it was Don Schmidt, and he was the lead investigator. They did a great job of doing their presentation, and I was real cocky when I went into that. I was definitely looking around at the people there and thinking, what pathetic lives do you have that you're here, you know, trying to hear this sensational story about aliens abducting humans. And so I was kind of snotty about it all, but I wanted to sit through it so that I could get the name of the hypnotist. Well, in the book, I go into it quite a bit about how it was just like being in a, like, it's like a movie, like what you see in a movie when they do those flashbacks in a movie, and it's all done very dramatic, like explosions, you know, when they do that, and it's depicted in a movie. That's how it was for me. I sat in that audience, and they started showing a slip chart of some of the craft that had been reported. And they came to one which was a big round ball globe that had orange lights on it and kind of an orange tint to it. And that, I had just seen that the night before. I had gone out on a showing and I had seen that, and I had lost time with that whole episode, and I didn't even remember it until I saw that. And it just exploded in my head, and the explosions kept happening, and I got very disturbed and upset. And
so it became more than just about what happened when you were 17. It was what happened the night before, too.
Exactly, and it scared me because I hadn't remembered it. And it's interesting because in the book I talk about how, you know, I had that, and then when I got home, I get home and my daughter, my youngest daughter and my husband are out in the front yard, and they're running around and pointing up at the sky, and they came over to the car and said a UFO had just been hovering over the house. And so I didn't remember any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was weird. But I finally connected with Don Schmidt, and I told him, I said, I don't have anything to report other than I saw that orange globe thing in the sky last night. And he said, oh, okay, that's good. Go over and talk to that guy over there. And I said, well, I will. But I said, what I really want to do is I want to get the name of the hypnotist that you use. Well, he refused to give me the name. He wanted to know why I wanted it. And I told him what had happened when I was 17.
Uh-huh.
And I got a little perturbed because he seemed more interested in that thing from when I was 17 than he was to hear about my seeing the orange globe the night before. And I thought, that's weird. But he told me later that, you know, it had all the earmarks of what he was afraid was, you know, an abduction. But I didn't know that at the time. So he said that he wanted to talk to me further and he'd call me. So I left there that night pretty frustrated, knowing that I would never hear from him again. But I did. He called me, and we talked, got to know each other. He would call. He was very gentle with me, which is good, because I would have totally run the other direction.
Uh-huh.
He very gently persuaded me to be careful about hypnotism and that, you know, it's not something you want to enter into, you know, without any awareness and without any support. You want to use somebody who's really good. He wanted the Center for UFO Studies to be involved in my regression, and I said no, because, you know, you're going to go looking for that thing you call alien abduction, and that's not what happened, and I don't even believe in it. It's ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Right.
But it took him a long time, and finally he said the right thing. He said, He said, you want support there. You don't know what you're going to find. Almost certainly, it was just some random thing that happened and your car broke down and these guys helped you get it going because you weren't to be traumatized. You would have probably had on your body some marks or something that would show you that. And he said, so, you know, we just want to be there to help you get to the truth of this so that you can have peace around it. And he said, we'll have somebody there and we'll have support there and the guy we're going to use is the best there is. And so I finally agreed to it. And so we did the regression and several months later, I don't know the dates, but I can't remember the dates. I think it would have been probably the fall of 88, but I'm not sure. And I remember it was a pretty day. Maybe it was the spring of 89 because it was a really nice warm day out. I remember that. And we went down to Chicago and they had a guy by the name of,
That's okay.
He was phenomenal. He was the past president of the Ethical Hypnosis Society or American Hypnotic Society or whatever it's called. Anyway, he was fantastic, and he was a non-believer in abductions, which helped me a lot. So I was apologizing to everybody all day long, telling them, I'm sorry to waste your time. You know, you guys looking for this abduction thing. You're going to find out that's not what it is. So he put me, Stanley Mitchell, that's his name, Stanley Mitchell, he put me under. It took him a while to do it, and it was a fascinating experience.
What did you remember when you were under?
Everything. It came very slowly. It started, but once I got going and I was back there in that car, everything. He took me through three times. He took me through this whole thing where I was feeling the emotions and the fear and everything. The second time he took me through, he had me be the observer of it. And the third time, he had me just be very detached from all of it and kind of analytical.
So what happened? Really, what happened in those two missing hours?
Oh, well, the car rolled to stop, and I was right. As I sat there in my car, and that dude had stepped out into my lane of traffic and put his hand up, and then he leaned on the hood of my car, and he looked in there into the windshield at me, and he said, Sherry, we've been waiting for you. As soon as he said my name and said that, my heart just about jumped out of my chest, and I rolled up the window, locked the doors, put my arms on the steering wheel, crossed them, and I put my head down, and I wouldn't look at him. And he started scolding me, and he said, look at me, Sherry, look at me, don't do this to yourself. And I just ignored him. I was just terrified. And then I felt something move across my arms as I was sitting there in the car. I felt something brush up against my forearms, and I opened my eyes to look at him, and I saw what I thought, it's a claw, you know, it was a grayish tan hand. I think there were, if I remember right, there were three fingers on it. And it came across and it wrapped its long fingers around my right wrist, and then another hand came in and wrapped around my left wrist and pulled me out of the car. And
so let me ask you this. Did they open the door?
That was a really hard one for me, Christine. You know, I don't believe they did. And I couldn't reconcile that in my mind. I just couldn't. He kept backing me up and wanting me to go through that. And I wouldn't say it. I said, he kept asking if they opened the door, and I couldn't see them open the door, and I wouldn't accept that they pulled me right to the door. And so I said, I don't know. Uh-huh. But that's what they did. They pulled me right to the door, I believe anyway. I think that's how it went. Uh-huh. And then there I was standing by the side of the road by my car. I had one guy on each side of me with a vice-like grip on each wrist, and then standing in front of me was a guy who had been talking to me. He seemed a little bit bigger. He was definitely the leader. I was calm at this point because, as I have come to learn, when they touch you or when you look into their eyes, you become immediately calm. And
interesting.
That's what they did. And so we talked for a little while, and I looked at him. I studied him. He looked familiar to me, the leader. And I just took it all in, and I just was very detailed. I saw every detail of him, and I remember thinking, you know, how did that skinny neck hold up that big head, and what happened to his nose, because he just had a crevice there. His ears were the same thing. His mouth didn't move when he talked to me, but yeah, I heard his voice. It was very distinct, clear to me. But he finally said, we have work to do. And then he turned very quickly, and he just like zip, 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 and he's gone. And I turned to see where he went, and then I saw the ship sitting over in the field, quite a good, probably good distance away, you know, about maybe 2 football like fields away or so. And the guys on each side of me started walking and pulling me along with them, and I couldn't keep up with them. Uh-huh. And the other thing they did is they took me over the over a fence. There was a fence down in the ditch, and I couldn't get clarity on how did I get over that fence. And we glided right over it. Like my mind again wouldn't accept it. And they took me over there. And as we got closer to the ship, I saw the leader guy was already over there, standing and waiting for us. And there was a woman there who looked human to me. Uh-huh. And I was relieved, and I thought, oh, good, you know, there's another human being there. And but as we got closer, I saw she was not human. She looked very familiar to me also. And there was a ramp down on the ship. The ship looked to be about 20 feet in diameter. It was sitting on 3 legs. And it was very shiny, silver, very pretty. I love the ship. This is a little scout ship. And when we get there, I have to go up the ramp, which was difficult. He helped pull me up the ramp and go into the ship. And the first thing always when you go into the ship is you notice 2 things. You notice it's very, very cold in there, very cold. And even though it was a warm spring day or fall day, I'm not sure, I think it was spring. It was a warm day outside. It was cold in the ship. And then the ship is, even though it looked like it to be about 20 feet in diameter, it was way bigger on the inside. It looked like you would have to stand stooped over.
So you go inside, it looks a lot bigger than it looked from the outside.
Yep. Uh-huh, yep. It's the distortion in between the dimensions. I've come to understand a lot of this stuff, but at the time it didn't make sense to me. But I just like how he moves so fast and how they move so fast and they have to drag me along because it's about the difference in our dimensions, in our time, mm-hmm. in our perception of time.
So in a nutshell, what happened to you on that ship? Or maybe we should just go to another break, and when we come back, you can share with our listeners what happened. And then we'll talk about how you've come to recognize that this has been something that's been long-term and ongoing. And we're also going to share with our listeners about some of the how you work through some of your fear and some of the messages that these beings have for all of us. More with Sherry Wild here in just a few moments.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Hi there. My name is Audrey Michelle, host of Rewired Life Radio and a spiritual growth coach. I talk about this all the time on my show, listening to your body and acting on intuition. What do these things even mean? Here's the thing. About 10 years ago, I figured out I was doing it all wrong. I mean, I wasn't unhappy, but was I really happy? And then life sent me a spiritual smackdown, like it does, because I wasn't listening to my best resource, my body and my intuition. I was living from a place of fear. I was stressed and I was in pain, and I seemed to be happily unhappy. Mostly, I just didn't know what I didn't know. And what I didn't know was that my body and my intuition had all the tools I needed to live life as my best self. I'm sharing the tools I have learned over the last 10 years of my healing journey in my online class, Soul Awakening, beginning September 19th. Learn more. Go to audreymichelle.com/awaken. That's Audrey Michelle, spelled MICHEL.com/awaken.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns in certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW's WBLQ, 35 stations in Australia, and Transformation Talk Radio around the world. I'm talking today to Sherry Wilde. She is the author of The Forgotten Promise, Rejoining Our Cosmic Family. Now, Sherry, when we had to go to a break, you were talking about how you had, like, you were sort of recovering the memory for those 2 hours that were missing when you were 17, and these beings sort of grabbed you, pulled you through the door, and took you to this, you know, this spaceship. Can you tell our listeners, kind of briefly, because we, you know, there's so much to get in here, what happened to you on that ship?
Well, it was unbelievable to me. I mean, even though you're under hypnosis, I was aware that I was sitting in Stanley Mitchell's office in downtown Chicago. I could hear the traffic outside. So I'm listening to myself, and I'm watching myself relive this, and it's so unreal to me. But I knew that what I was recalling and reliving was the truth. I couldn't have made that up. There was no way. And so what happened on the ship was the woman who took me in there, the hybrid woman, who, by the way, I know her, is her name is Aurora. She's always there, usually, when they take me. And she helped me to get undressed. She told me I had to get undressed. And I knew that. On some level, I remembered that that's what was going to be happening. I had to lay down on the table. I had to, what I now know, but back then, I had no idea that this kind of thing would go on. But I now know it's the typical routine. They put me on the table, narrow, little, very cold slab of a table. And the leader guy came in, and the other little dudes came in. And the leader guy did a physical exam on me. And I was shaking like a leaf, but they calmed me down, and he went through that. And the main focus of it was, as he was doing it, he was talking to me gently about, you know, what he was doing. Then he came to the point where they harvested my eggs. And I got pretty upset about that, but he you know, explained to me. And so he did that. After it was done, I got dressed, and then he said, you know, I'd like to ask you some questions. Is that okay? And I said, sure. And he asked me questions, the first of which was, Sherry, are you happy? Which I thought was, when I heard that under hypnosis, I was like, what? Really?
Okay.
These guys fly.
So this is sort of so you're re-experiencing something, and it seems to me on some level they're just like, you know, treating you like a lab rat or whatever. They've taken you, and yet he's asking you what seems like a profound question.
Yeah. Exactly. That was my thinking, too. And I tell you, Christine, I thought about that over and over. And in my journey to get to the heart of what this is all about and to understand, what is this? Am I a victim? Is this me being a lab rat to them? But when I think of him asking me, you know, Sherry, are you happy? That's the first, it seemed to be his first and major concern to him. And I now remember in all my experiences, that's the first thing you always ask. Are you happy? And tells me I need to be happy. Well, I come back and I tell him, no, I'm not happy here. I don't belong here. You know, can I stay with you? I always ask, beg to stay with them once I get comfortable with him and I start to remember. And then he tells me, you know, that I can't go with him. I can't stay with him, and that, you know, I'm meant to be here and that it's all okay. And I say, but, you know, I don't feel like I belong on this planet because humans they're kind of mean to each other, and they have wars and they kill each other. And we talked about the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. and talked about that stuff. And but he reassured me that, you know, that they were always around, but that it was important. You know, I needed mm-hmm. to stay here and live my life. When he told right. me that it was time for me to leave, I had stayed longer than I should have. And he said, he gave me something to drink that he said would help me to settle my stomach. But he said, I'd probably get sick. And I said, why? And he said, well, because of the difference in the frequencies between our dimensions. And sure enough, in my diary, I found my diary after I was regressed, I came back home. I dug around and I found a diary that I had kept when I was in my teenage years. And mm-hmm. sure enough, I found that day when that had happened. No mention of being 2 hours late. Didn't even write that in the book, in the diary, but I did write that I got sick later, and I ended up not being able to go shopping. I had to lay in the back seat of the car all afternoon. So I did get sick from it 3 times.
Okay, so you've opened the floodgates through this hypnosis. Uh-huh. Were there other episodes? And if so, did you ever become sort of consciously aware as they were happening?
Absolutely. At the end of the regression, he asked me if I wanted to leave the door open or closed, and I asked him what that meant, and he said, if you leave the door open, the events will become more and more clear to you, the details. If I close the door, then you'll go back to not remembering any of it, and I didn't want that again. That was frustrating. So I said, leave the door open. So he did, and I continued on the drive back to Wisconsin, and for days and days and weeks afterwards, I would just have these explosions of memories coming through. Not just on that event, which I got clarity on, but then I started to get memories of other strange things in my life, missing time that I had not paid any attention to. Mm-hmm. And it was just overwhelming to me how much had happened and how much I had spent, time I'd spent with these guys. It was devastating. I mean, I was living a secret life. I had a whole other life. I had a whole other life with these guys on the ship. Oh, it was just more than I could handle. I couldn't believe that was my reality and that was my world and everything. I almost lost it. I tried to kill myself because I couldn't come to terms with it. I tried to kill myself after I became aware that it was happening in real time. Okay. And after I found out that they were also coming for my daughter. Those two things and my husband leaving me, it was uh-huh. too much.
So I find this rather interesting because, you know, here you are, like when you're on the ship, not wanting to leave because you feel like that is the stronger connection to home. And yet within the context of being human, living your normal life, you felt what you say in your book is a sense of shame and a sense of confusion and worried about how others are going to judge you. I mean, that seems kind of sad if there's this connection there that it's, that you were having a hard time integrating it into your life.
It did. It took me a long, long time. I played over and over again the events, and I thought, well, I have what they call Stockholm Syndrome. I had some investigators say, well, you have Stockholm Syndrome. And I looked that up, and I was like, yep, that's what I've got. Cause, you know. But then I was thinking about the things that they had taught me, and they taught me all these things about our Creator, and they have such reverence for the Creator and for all life. And they were teaching me, you know, that we are all one with the Creator. They were teaching me that we're an evolving species and we need to wake up and we need to remember the truth of who we are. And we're destroying our planet. And don't we understand our planet is a living, sentient being? And, I mean, they just, all the stuff they were teaching me ran contrary to them being evil and being coming in and doing evil things to me. And when I looked at it, I thought, well, when he's giving me the exam, he's telling me, oh, sure, you have a weakness in your legs, and it's a good thing that we, you know, we come in and treat you, because if we weren't able to do that, you probably wouldn't be able to walk, because your frequency doesn't resonate well with this body. You know, and they were tweaking me. I mean, he would explain things to me. I thought, well, that doesn't seem like a very mean thing that they're doing. And the thing mm-hmm. about taking my eggs, I didn't know what to make of that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a long, long journey trying to unravel the. And get to the heart of what really was going on.
So do you know what they did with those eggs?
Yeah, I eventually cut to the chase. I mean, it took years and years and years and years and years of me talking to them and asking them and then researching on my own and getting to the heart of it. What I learned was that I was a volunteer and that I mm-hmm. volunteered to come here this is my one and only time on this planet, as millions of other souls agreed to come to the planet as volunteers to help raise the frequency and awaken people to the truth of who they are. And so I agreed to participate in what's called the hybrid. There's a lot of hybrid programs. I'm a participant in the hybrid program. I allowed them to take my eggs so that they could create and keep human species alive. Because when I came onto the planet in 1950, we were on a timeline. We were headed for disaster. The planet was going to be destroyed and humanity was going to, you know, be killed off, and that was going to be the end of Earth humans. We didn't want that to happen, so I came onto the planet and said, I'll be a human, you take my eggs, and you know, and we can continue this, the biological entity known as the Earth human. But that was, you know, that was part of the plan, but the other part of the plan was enough of us coming onto the planet, raising the frequency and the awareness, thereby hopefully catching this opportunity to ascend into the fifth dimension, which is what's happening now.
Right. And there are some very important messages about that, and some interesting aspects of the timing that they told you as well. But we have to go to another quick break. Stay tuned for more.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelmed and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath. To signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is, sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Welcome back here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Sherry, before we go further, and there's so much more to talk about, can you please share with our listeners how they can connect with you?
I have a website, which is theforgottenpromise.net. So www.theforgottenpromise.net. And
wonderful.
I have a link on there if they want to email me. And I have a blog, which I haven't written in for a long time, but they can also communicate that way.
Yeah, and I highly recommend the book of the same name, The Forgotten Promise, Rejoining Our Cosmic Family. It's got fascinating details about your many, many experiences that you both remembered, you know, but also, like, were conscious of moving forward, and too many details to go into here on the show. Okay, so the experiences continue. You were learning things. First of all, were your daughters involved? Were your kids involved in any way?
I have two daughters, and I don't talk about it much, but my oldest daughter has been involved. They were involved with her conception. I was told when to conceive her, and they were there every step of the way through my pregnancy. My youngest daughter is not a participant, but she's seen them. She was involved peripherally because they would come to the house and see the little guys running around. So, but they were curious about her, but they never, as far as I know, she has never been taken, whereas my oldest son has been.
So how do your daughters feel about you sort of coming out of the closet, you know, internationally by writing this book and being on shows like this?
Not well. Not well at all. My oldest daughter and I are estranged. She hasn't talked to me for probably 8 years. My youngest daughter refused to talk to me when she heard about the book, and she told me she would never speak to me again, and we went a long time without her talking to me. And she's come back around, and she has only recently started to acknowledge that the book is even out there. She hasn't read it, and I understand that. You know, you have to understand what they went through in those years. It was very traumatizing, and we had a pact as a family to not talk about it, not acknowledge it. Don't lie. I always told them don't lie about it, but don't talk about it. And I broke that pact, you know, when the time came to write the book. And it's embarrassing. And I understand that my youngest daughter is a professional in real estate business, and it's embarrassing. We live in a small town, and most people don't understand this.
Right. But it, you know, reading your book, it feels very, very important. And, you know, I love the fact that there has been some corroboration. I mean, there are other people who say to you, the spaceships, you know, people have seen the bruises on your wrists from being, you know, pulled along in whatever way to for your experiences. And yet the messages that they have for humanity are huge. What was it about 2009 that was important?
2009, they came back. They had left my life in about 1990 or 91, and I don't recall any visits from them at all for almost 20 years when it came back in 2009, and then all of a sudden, one night, I roll over in bed, open my eyes, and there he is. And he says, and I look at him, and I go, oh, my gosh, what are you doing here? And he said, well, we told you about the great earth changes. You know, we're in the midst of it now, and there's work to be done. And he sat there and talked to me for the longest time that night, and he explained how we were going to, you know, go into this time of chaos, and everything was going to come undone because it was time for us to move into the higher frequencies, and anything that did not resonate with that high frequency would have to crumble and fall away. So anything that wasn't based on love would be undone. And he said, you know, watch as everything, your financial institutions and your big corporations and companies, and he said, it's all, they're just, everything will come undone as it needs to do, and be rebuilt with the base of love instead of fear. And so it's been interesting, you know. We are ascending. The earth is moving into the fifth dimension. She has held back her ascension while she waited for her children. The children were not waking up, and we're not waking up. And we're on a timeline to destroy the planet. And that's what these times are all about. That's why so many of us answered the call to come in and volunteer. And the planet is definitely moving into the fifth dimension. That's why there's so much chaos in the world, and things are getting better. It seems like things are a mess and that we're going to hell in a handbasket really fast, but that's not true. You know, the programming that we've been getting from the controllers of the planet and the lies that we've been told, you know, just like people have been programmed to laugh at people who have these kinds of experiences and encounters, when ridiculous to think that we're alone in the universe.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot to overcome. And it's not easy to talk to people about this subject, but I do it anyway. I mean, it has to be done. It's an important part of our coming into maturity. We're like little kindergartners here on this planet, and it's time for us to grow up and wake up.
Right.
I think
in terms of the books out there and in the media, I mean, I think about the movie E.T. coming out in the 80s. It seemed like perfect timing to look at something that sort of resembled a gray. And seeing that, you know, he was a loving, compassionate, healing being as opposed to just these evil Martians, you know, coming in to be destroyed, you know, just hoping to destroy our planet. So, and it seems like there are some very important messages here. And you were talking about how, you know, they showed that we're like all a part of, you know, God, the creator, however you want to put it. And that we are risking destroying our planet and sort of, you know, opening our eyes to shift things. Were there any other messages that, you know, you'd like to share before we get off today?
Well, they taught me something called the three important things to know, and they started teaching those to me when I was a little girl, very little. And the three important things to know, they would quiz me on it and test me on it and explain it over and over again until I finally grasped the meaning of it. And three important things to know, that the number one most important thing to know is that we are all one with our Creator. And they would teach me that. And you think that we understand that, but they would say to me things like, it has to be more than a bumper sticker. I remember him saying that to me. It has to be more than a bumper sticker. You have to live it. You have to live it. You have to be it. We are all one with our Creator. They said, if humanity could just get that, that would cure all the problems on the planet. Everything would change. With just understanding that when you look at another, you're looking at yourself. There's no separation, even though we appear to be separate.
And in fact, what you say in your book is that it actually goes beyond, like, from one human to another, but in terms of, you know, all living things.
Right, all living things, they say. And that's why when I was with them, I always wanted to stay with them, because you're in that frequency of love, unconditional love, and it just feels so safe and so wonderful because they have such reverence for life. They just appreciate life. So the number two most important thing to know is we are multidimensional beings existing on more than one level simultaneously, which is a real mouthful, and that gets very, that's a very deep subject, but that's important to know, especially now. And then the third most important thing to know is monitor your thoughts. And that was something that they taught me how to do when I was young, and that's been a big benefit to me.
So why should we monitor our thoughts?
Because your thoughts are really creating. They say that we're like projectors.
Mm-hmm.
We are like projectors, and we are projecting by our thoughts, and we project out, and that creates our reality. It creates our experience, and it's huge. And it affects how we interact with one another. Our thoughts. You think that we're separate, but whatever it is you're thinking about another person, you meet them, and you have a judgment about them. That taints them. That taints you. That taints the energy. Your thoughts are, it's just so important that they be positive. They have to be kept positive because our thoughts are what are creating the frequency on the planet, and the frequency on the planet was so low that the heartbeats almost went out on the planet because we had such negative, dark thoughts. So you have to keep the positive thoughts positive, still coming from your heart and based in love rather than in fear.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask for a quick yes or no answer to this question, Sherry. Based on what you know and what they've communicated to you, do you have hope for our planet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're going to make it. I mean, we have to. We can't ever be totally destroyed or totally lost. You know, we're eternal beings. We're created as eternal beings. So, yeah, you want a yes or no, but it definitely is a yes.
The book is called The Forgotten Promise, Rejoining Our Cosmic Family. It's a wonderful book. If you're at least interested in the subject, I highly recommend it. Sherry Wild is the author, our guest today, and it's SHERRYWILDE, and her website is theforgottenpromise.net. Sherry, thank you so much for having the courage to share and for being here today.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate it. It's been nice talking with you.
And I thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.